Welcome to Rexomatic Records with your hosts Rex Anderson, Tom Hughes, and Andy Kern. This is a show dedicated to pretty much anything we want to talk about. On today's show, we have Dan Tomlinson. Dan is a drummer who spent 16 years on the road with the Lyle Lovett Band and currently works out of his studio in Phoenix, Arizona. Dan has also contributed to most of the songs on the new Big For His Age 2 album, scheduled for release in November of this year.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, this is Rex, and I've got Andy Kern on the line and Tom Hughes on the line. Tom, I'll have you kick it off with maybe, because I know you've asked a lot about Dan's background. Go ahead and kind of get us started there with what you'd like to know kind of about how Dan got into this drumming business.
Yeah, I was curious about how you started. And when I was growing up in Sea Caucus, a friend of mine, when I was a little, you know, in grammar school, his dad was a band leader at one of the clubs in New York City. And his name, my friend's name was Danny Benito. And he started drumming, you know, from the very first time you can really pick up a drumstick and make a little beat. And I was just wondering how you started out.
Well, same as many people, I was influenced from the Beatles, of course. I had an older brother, 3 years older. And so he decided to start taking guitar lessons. And I did the same thing. I did guitar for about a year in fourth grade. And I just didn't like it. I knew it wasn't the instrument for me. So I had to figure out, well, I'm either going to play bass or drums, you know, because that's what the choices. I was definitely looking at rock and my roots. So I finally saw a drum set in a window and just kind of went gaga over that. And so I got a drum set and took it home and set it up, and I was able to pretty much play to the Beatles records like that.
No kidding.
I mean, just the, you know, the first rock beat, the money beat, they call it, just playing eighth notes with the right hand and one and three on the bass drum and two and four on the snare, I was able to right off the bat. So I was hooked right then and there.
So as opposed to eating guitar, you seem to have like a natural affinity or natural skill with the drums.
Yeah, it was definitely just all natural. I naturally just went right to the instrument right off the bat. Whereas guitar, I was struggling, and it's like I didn't like. So anyway, after, you know, like that first night of actually, after I set my drums up and I was able to play right along with beat songs, I was so hooked. And then Cream came out, and I was like totally infatuated with Ginger Baker, so like my first idol. And I soon had a Ludwig double bass drum set. And, you know, I thought like Ginger was the world's best drummer. And I was talking to some guy and goes, no, he's not the world's best drummer. Buddy Rich is the world's best drummer. I'm like, who's Buddy Rich? He goes, just go buy his records. So I went out and bought some of his records, but it was big band music, which was totally different than rock. But after I heard Buddy do drum solos, it was like, yeah, this guy is like the best drummer in the world. You know, if there could be one, there actually isn't. But then I got in Buddy Rich, which got me into jazz.
And that's a whole different style, right? I mean, if you listen to Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa, you're talking about a completely different style of drumming.
Oh, yeah, completely different. But to me, I fell in love with the drum set. So I was just completely infatuated with the drum set, and then anything that anybody did on the drum set, it's like I had to find out how they did it. And it didn't matter if it was country. I even listened to country, and my dad had a couple country albums, and I would play along to those. I actually hated country music, but it's just I wanted to play anything that anybody played on a drum set. So I was looking at it from that point of view.
Did you ever listen later on, when it became sort of more available, to any, say, Ravi Shankar's drummers or that kind of different, really different style?
I did. I could, because of George Harrison, when he did the song with Me Without You, he had tabla on the record. And when I heard the tabla drums, I went nuts because it was a sound that I really, really loved. So I went out and bought a pair of tablas, but I couldn't figure out how to use them. It's actually a really complicated instrument, and you have to have somebody show you how to do it. It's like you can't really figure that one out. It's too hard. There's all these specific finger positions and stuff that you have to learn, and there's just kind of no way to figure that out on your own.
Dan, this is Rex. I just want to interrupt here a second. So you posted a photo, and if you wouldn't mind, we'd like to share that photo in the process of communicating this, of your kind of organized drum room. And we were surprised how many different types of drums that you had in there. So some of this kind of grew out of that.
Yeah, just the complete love for the drums. It doesn't matter what style. I was like hooked in all of them. And there was no way I could just go, because I have a lot of friends. If they're rock and roll musicians, they hated jazz.
Right.
Jazz friends, they hate rock. Like, I could never think that way because it was just all music. So I didn't have any boundaries, so I just studied every style I could.
So what were some of the kind of early bands that you were involved with where you started going from playing live drums and shows to going into a studio to start experimenting with recording drums?
I think first session I was around 16 years old. Yeah. I was in Kansas City and I did a recording session, but I'm sure it didn't sound all that great.
Do you still have a copy of that?
I don't know. And then my first sessions were, most of them, there was a studio here in town called Pantheon. Do you guys remember that studio? Yeah. So that was the first studio that I started at in Phoenix. And then, I started doing a whole bunch of them over at Chaton, like with Andy Siegel. So most of all my early sessions were with Andy Siegel over at Chaton.
Now, was it your session work that led you to start joining some performers, bands, and touring?
Yeah, I met Lyle Lovett over at Chaton. They hired three different drummers to play on different songs of Lyle's, and I was one of the drummers. So I actually met Lyle at Chaton, the original Chaton in Paradise Valley.
Oh, okay. And you toured with him for quite a while.
Yeah. 16 years straight. And then after that, I've been like the first call sub drummer.
Which means I probably saw you at least two or three or four times and didn't know it was you.
One of the things, Dan, on your website, I noticed that you list is kind of the enjoyment you had in meeting other musicians while you were on the road with Lyle Lovett and playing behind those other musicians. Are there a few of those? I know you loved playing with Lyle and still do. Are there other musicians that kind of stand out to you, say, wow, that was a really enjoyable experience for whatever reason?
Yeah, the most incredible experience was when we opened up 12 shows for Sting. Uh-huh. Yeah, and so Sting was using my all-time favorite drummer, Vinny Caliuta. So I got to watch, you know, my favorite drummer and meet him and hang out with him. And Sting would also sit in with us and play.
Nice.
Yeah, so the Sting tour was the ultimate one for me.
So opening for Sting and watching your favorite drummer. Any other musicians that you backed up and played while playing with Lyle that you recall?
Oh yeah, one of my the musician that I really enjoyed playing with, probably the most out of all those artists, was Bonnie Raitt. She just you know, when she plays the guitar, she just has a really great groove and great vibe, and She plays with a lot of emotion, and her timing is like really, really good. She's also a very incredible person. Like, she would always, you know, be eating with us at catering, where a lot of the artists are like, you know, they don't want to lower themselves to be eating, you know, with the help. So, you know what I mean? So, she was just super individual, and that came through in her playing also.
Do you do you ever sing? And I'm wondering what you think of the drummers who manage to play and do the lead vocals in their bands. Like, I mean, when Levon Helm and the Eagles drummer, Karen Carpenter, and...
Yeah, it's definitely, I love it. It's awesome. I took vocal lessons for a while because I really wanted to be able to sing, but my pitch is just really bad, and so I just gave up on it. My pitch was pretty atrocious. Like, I have trouble singing Happy Birthday without having some sour notes, so it's like I shouldn't be singing. But yeah, I truly respect drummers that sing, and I can actually sing, and it's not really a coordination problem for me. The pitch, my pitch is just right, not good. There's some people that shouldn't sing, and I'm one of them. Bob Dylan's another one. Right.
Well, you know, Dan, when you're talking about pitch, one of the things that I noticed some almost 20 years ago, when you bring your drum the studio, I remember you had some really beautiful maple kits you'd bring in, but you used to spend a lot of time tuning those drums. And maybe you could kind of give us a brief summary of how you approach a studio session when you've had a chance to know the song a little bit before coming into the session, and you kind of know what you're faced with.
Yeah, I mean, to really go into it would take quite a while, but basically, just for jazz, there's a basic tuning style, and then rock, there's a couple different tuning methods. Like in the 70s, it was a really kind of dead, muffled sound. Sure. For instance, like Ringo would just put like a whole sheet over his drums when he did some of the songs like Come Together. So it's just a real dead, thud kind of muffled sound. So everybody pretty much stopped doing the really dead muffled sound and went back to kind of more just the original sound of the drums with two heads on them. And when you have two heads on them, you have a lot of different overtones that you have to deal with, and so that if the drums aren't in tune, they can sound pretty atrocious. So I just try to make sure that all the different little oops, I hit the space bar on Pro Tools.
Tell us a little bit about the setup that you have there.
Okay, I use an iMac, and I use the Apollo 8P. It has a 8 XLR inputs on the back, and then I also have a preamp that has 8 preamps in it. That's I'm using a light pipe into the Apollo. So then I have 16 tracks of 16 tracks of mics that I can use, and using Pro Tools 12, and you know, lots of the Waves plugins, and the Apollo plugins are really awesome. I'm totally nuts about Apollo and Universal Audio. Have you guys seen the new Luna program?
Yeah, I have. Are you considering shifting from Pro Tools, or is that just too much of a jump for you?
Yeah, I'm considering it because it just looks really awesome. Does. Yeah, I've never. It'd be a kind of a nightmare to relearn a whole new program, but I'm thinking about it.
Dan, on the new album, as you know, you recorded drums on several of the newer songs that just got recorded, and one of the songs you coached and helped Ben Anderson, my nephew, played at your studio. What was the kit? Do you recall the kit that he was using? It's kind of a, if I recall, like kind of a tiger-like wood on the side of it, but I wasn't sure what.
Yeah, it's a DW Collector Series, which is the top of the line DW. And that kit, it's maple shells, and got a really gorgeous veneer ply on the outside. It's called ebony ivory, and it's like that tiger stripe look. But yeah, it's a really great drum set. I really love all the DW products.
How did you find working with him as a younger drummer coming in there and somebody who hadn't had a lot of drumming experience?
Oh, it was a complete delight working with him because he has like so much natural ability, and there wasn't, he's a great player already. And the only thing I really had to work on with him was just, a few of the bass drum patterns, but yeah, I mean, his natural ability is excellent. Well, I mean, he's got so much natural ability. He could very well just have a career as a drummer.
Well, good. Yeah. We'd like to hear that. We'll have a chance to hopefully talk to all the musicians on their record and in creating this series. Now, I just want to take you back about 20 years ago. And you played on the first Big for His Age album. And at that time, Kerry Jackson was doing a lot of the instrumentation and helping with the arrangements on that album, which we had a lot of success with that album when it came out. About 9 or so years later, we had you in the what I call Living Head Audio home studio. it was after David had to close down Living Head Audio Recording. And I just thought, do you remember that day that we set that up down there where you were in what is now his new mastering studio, but at the time was just a half underground room?
Right. Sure, I recall.
And we set it up so you were down there, and all the band members were up above. It's a little bit different when you're playing and not looking directly at the other musicians, isn't it?
But it doesn't bother me at all, because a lot of times I just like to close my eyes when I play.
Yeah. Is your approach comparing that type of a recording where you've got kind of the live energy of everybody in the room, which ends up being on four of the tracks of the album, compare that to the process that you take when you hear a song and we bring you the tracks and now you're going to lay in the drums? What are the kind of steps you go through in getting ready to do that?
Well, first I chart out the song, so I know the form of the song and like if there's any accents or any stops where you have to stop and rest. I just chart all that information out first, and then just start going for some different takes. And I'll record some different grooves with the song and see which one sounds the best. I could think, well, I think this beat's going to sound the best, but I'm going to try this other one. And sometimes when I listen back, it's that other one that I didn't think was going to work actually ended up working better. So it's always best to record stuff and play it back to see how it sounds, because sometimes it can surprise you. So I just go through kind of my mental Rolodex of all the different that would work for that particular song, and just record some different ones and pick that out. And then once I know the best, then I just start going for the take.
Do you switch to different kits for different songs or different sounds or different artists?
Yeah, right now I've got a client that he wants the front head off the bass drum. He wants, more of that 70s muffled kind of sound. So for projects like that, I'll put up a different drum kit. Or if I had to record a jazz song, I'd have to put up a jazz kit. So I do switch kits for different projects and different styles.
Has the inability for bands to tour, is that giving you just a lot more work in your studio?
Yeah, it's been a real blessing in a way. I was like, to be honest, just completely terrified, of not being able to do gigs anymore. No one, hopefully it's not going to stay that way, but for the amount of time that I haven't played gigs, I mean, the level of stress and depression that I've went through was really pretty incredible. And my the saving grace was my studio. So I just started, you know, instead of, you know, feeling sorry for myself, I just started, you know, getting back into Pro Tools more. And now I'm so heavily into it, I don't think I want to go out and do any I just want to stay home in my studio and work. Yeah, so it's been awesome.
So, Dan, if people wanted to get a hold of you for projects, what's the best way to reach you? Through your website?
Yeah, danpattinson.com. I'm also starting another band. It's called Rhythm Religion. So it's going to have a couple, like three, four drummers in it and a rhythm section. So I made a website for that. And I'm going to have like a little online store, and there's a form on there. The whole website's already up because I had to get it all organized and put it up on the internet to get the trademark for it. Well, I've been working like a year and a half just trying to get the trademark for Rhythm Religion, which I should have pretty soon, hopefully. But you can go to rhythmreligion.com and check that out. That's whole new project that I've started. Yeah.
Andy, is there anything else that you want to kind of throw in from a engineer producer's perspective? I'll just say this, that every time Andy got the tracks over, he had a smile on his face. so we really appreciate the work you did on Big for.
Oh, good. Well, they're getting better and better. Yeah, I've been working really hard on the engineering.
Yeah, it came out really good, Dan. And actually, Rex, you kind of got my question already, so.
Oh, okay.
I don't have anything. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So, Andy, for you, have you been getting more work with the COVID issue going on?
No, but I haven't, because I have a really small, extremely small space I'm in. I don't really want to be that close to people, so I've just kind of been in a bubble.
Yeah. Right. Got it. Have you had like levels of depression that were been hard to deal with?
Well, yeah, I'd have to say not like my typical depression that I'm kind of susceptible to.
Like I always have a kind of a underlying amount of depression.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So I would say whatever that is, I have that, but just add a little bit of dread on top. And that's me.
Okay, got it. Right. No. Well, it's good to be open about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I have my daughter living really close, so I am involved in their family and the grandkids and stuff, so it's not like I'm completely isolated. Awesome. I think I would have lost it if I didn't have that outlet.
Yeah, yeah. And the little kid is such an inspiration.
Yep. They were watching, the little one was watching, do you know the band Jared in the Mill? You heard of them from here? Well, I think they're from Mesa. Really good. And my daughter sent me a picture of my 5-year-old grandson watching a live stream they were doing, and he wasn't doing anything. And then when a fill came up, then he would mimic the fill on the drums.
Oh, would he? Wow!
Yeah, he's very observant little guy.
Yeah. You'll have to play him the big drum fill that Phil Collins does.
I'm not even sure you know what that was. They listen to kind of, just like modern alt stuff right now. That's funny though.
Right.
Dan, how do you feel about all the different some different bands that are just relying on drum machines, like the one called Drum Machine and Beat Buddy, and how much are they losing out on by not having a live drummer playing with them on their recordings?
Boy, I don't know. It's always just that always just comes down to, you know, a human's going to have human feel. But the sound of drum machines, I love. I just bought Reason 11. And they've got a bunch of drum machines in there, and I'm going nuts with it. I love
really?
Drum machines. Yeah, so it's so easy to just get a great sound right off the bat. But I don't feel, you know, I don't have any angst against people that don't use real drummers and that are using drum machines. I love drum machines.
Interesting.
So,
How was your drumming technique changed from the first Big Fur's Age album to this new one? I mean, have you, is it just a matter of being more refined or learning how different drum kits sound and the best drum kit to partner with a certain song?
Yeah, well, I'm always kind of, you know, trying to make my drumming better. I finally got to the point where I realized I was definitely getting way too technical and I was starting to sound that way. And so I kind of had to reverse myself and give up on trying to, you know, to have too perfect of technique, because it just gets to the point where you sound too clinical and you lose that rawness that sounds great. In a lot of ways, I've just like tried to stop thinking, you know, of technique and all that. And sometimes I'll kind of think of bad technique because it kind of has its own kind of sound. Yeah. So, yeah, I try not to get as technical as I used to be. I finally learned a lesson from that, like Paul McCartney said, if it gets too technical, it's going to start sounding that way.
Right. So there's a kind of a danger in over perfectionism.
Yeah, there's a real danger. Yeah, a true danger. And there's a danger with all these young drummers watching all the drum videos, you know, where guys are just like going nuts and soloing, and their chops are just friggin' amazing. But those kind of drummers, you know, they just can't play like a simple rock beat. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's a huge danger in trying to get too good, so to speak.
Yeah, and I saw a performance years ago by Terry Bozzio at South by Southwest. And he had such a complicated drum kit, you literally could not see him. He was like a turtle in this gigantic brass shell. And the performance was remarkable, but I'm not quite sure what it added up to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I've met Terry, and I totally respect him. He tried to just make a career as just doing drum solos. So I respect him, you know, for going into that world. And, he's like always been one of the leading drummers in the drum world. And I have the utmost respect for him. But, yeah, so you can see where some of that leads. It's like, you know, is this really what the direction you want to go? Yeah.
Well, I think, Tom, if you've got a question or two, we'll get closer to wrapping this up here pretty quick.
Okay.
Yeah, I was also wondering if there were any particular performances that were either recorded on television shows with bands or recorded, you know, on a variety show or live from Austin. I can't remember, of course, the name of the PBS show.
Austin City Limits.
That you're particularly proud of, that we might be able to capture a little piece of you drumming on one of those.
Yeah, I did a drum solo on one of the Austin City Limits shows, and I put that drum solo up on YouTube. So you could just Google Dan Tomlinson YouTube Austin City Limits, and there's like, you know, it's not a very long solo. It's kind of just short and sweet.
Well, that's great.
That would be the...
Well, Dan, we really appreciate you taking the time to visit us today.
Okay.
And at the same time, we really appreciate your addition to the Big Fur's Age 2 album. And I think when you hear the final version, you'll be really pleased and hopefully proud of the work you did on it.
Great. Yeah, I can't wait to get the vinyl, because I still haven't hooked up my turntable, and that's what's going to make me hook up my turntable. I'm waiting for that album.
Well, that's the last thing I wanted to ask you. Tell us a little story about a personal connection to vinyl records that you might recall out of your life.
Well, it's since I was so gung-ho and crazy about being a drummer for a living, I decided that I would be a drummer for a living when I was 15, so I quit school and stayed home and practiced 8 hours a day. For a year, yeah. And I had the guy that invented the clear drum set was my teacher. So I was trying to buy, I didn't have a lot of money, but I tried to buy as many albums as I could because through that 8 hours, at least 3 hours was devoted to just playing the records. So I was always, you know, buying as many records as I could afford. So records are amazing. I still have my whole collection, but I haven't hooked up my turntable in years. Once you release your vinyl record, I'm going to get it and finally hook up my turntable and get out all my albums and listen to
them. Yeah, that sounds great. Well, thanks for spending the time. We'll let you go now and get back to your studio, okay. But we really appreciate you spending some time with us.